So we're going to start with a riddle. See if you can write down what you think this is. Seen by none, but known by all, I can raise you high or cause a fall. I whisper without breath, stand without feet. I can open hearts or close doors with my beat. Invisible yet vivid, I paint your life's tale, shaping how your ship will sail. I'm not a coin, yet value I hold, more precious than silver, more coveted than gold. It is I that with no shape or form can shield you from any harm or weather any storm. What am I that without a voice can declare your worth, your ultimate choice? What am I? Answer, a name. Just a name. More specifically, your name, my name. And more specifically than that, by name, we usually mean reputation. What is your reputation? Think about this for a second. What do you think about when you hear the following names? Jesus Christ, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Peter, Paul, Lucifer, Henry VIII, Napoleon Bonaparte, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Benedict Arnold, Judas Iscariot, Will Smith, Albert Einstein, Amazon, Microsoft, Adele, LeBron James, on and on. What do we think about when we hear those names? Those specific names have a reputation attached to them. Let's think about the name Lucifer. Now, the Lucifer, the irony of that name is it actually means light bringer or bringer of light. But no one that I'm aware of thinks positive things when they hear the name Lucifer, no matter how positive the name may sound, because of what the person became or the being became. So his reputation took a humongous hit. Some of these names that I just mentioned have extremely positive reputations attached to them, and some absolutely evil reputations. We all have a name. We all have reputations. Whether we're aware of it or not, whether we purposefully tried to build a name or not, or we passively allowed our name to be built, we each have a name, including the youth. Reputation actually begins in our youth. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20. Verse 11. Even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. To hear it, this could actually say even a child has a rep. Even a child has a reputation. And when we mean child, it can mean a young child. Now, the interesting thing about that is a young child, younger than a teenager, their reputation is pretty much guided by the correction and instruction, or lack thereof, that they get from those who are over them. So, how much they're responsible for that? But once you become a teenager, that's when you really begin thinking about your reputation and your name and what it means, and what it means to other people. When someone hears your name, what emotions, thoughts are conjured into their mind when they hear it? What's attached to that name? (Clears throat) What's the value of having a good name? How can a good name or a bad name affect you in either way? Tonight, we're going to discuss the true value of developing and maintaining a good name. Turn to Proverbs chapter 22, just over a little bit. I'm going to start by talking about some of the benefits that you have of having a good name. Verse 1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Now, I'm going to read this in a different translation. It's a little easier to understand, even though that's not that difficult to understand. A good name is more desirable than great riches, and favor is better than silver and gold. But what does it mean to have a good name? Whatever it is more desirable than great riches. Whatever a good name is, it's powerful. It's more power. It's one of the most powerful things that you can possess. It's the most valuable thing you can possess is your name. To most, your name or a good name means the weight that name carries, the thoughts and the feelings and the attitude that is conjured into one's mind when they hear it or they see that name. It's actually, if we go deeper into what a name or reputation, what a reputation is, it's the cumulative result of the actions and decisions that we make in life. That is where your name or your reputation comes from. So if money is power, we've all heard that, right? Money is power. If money is power, and gold and silver would be money and jewels and all that, what is having a good name? How powerful is that? How powerful is having a good name? Now, there are many benefits. There's many benefits to having a good name. The scripture says you have loving favor. People prefer you over other people. You have a good name. People hear you have a good name. They prefer you over someone else. They'll give you things that they wouldn't give other people. They'll give you leeway they wouldn't give other people. That's what having a good name is. I'll give you rewards that I would not give someone else. Or maybe I might give them rewards, but I'm going to give them to you first. You are first. They're second. Let's look at this in the terms of employment. If you're someone who is a faithful employee, you come in and you come in on time, you work hard all the time, you never slack. You rarely ever call off or anything like that. Your employer is going to look at that and they're going to say, wow, this is a great employee. Managers, they look for those type of people. They look at your team player. Hey, I need you to stay after late. Yeah, I'll do it. And you do it most of the time and it's consistent. It's not, it's consistent. I'm telling you. I was a manager in the world. I'm a manager now, but in the world, you look for those people. You're looking for those people. It's hard to find because most people, they're flaky. Most people, they come in when they want, they leave when they want. I don't know how they get away with it, but they do pretty much whatever they want, and that's tough because a lot of businesses don't give you the leeway to get rid of them. Who are you going to get to replace them? The other people that you get to replace them are just like them. So what's the point? That's pretty much how the management thinks out in the world. So when you come across someone who is that type of an employee, you're willing to do a lot for them. You're willing to give them breaks. If that type of employee is late, usually they're going to call. It doesn't happen all the time. And as a result, you give them favor. You don't think, oh, here we go. This person is late. You don't think that. It's not even a blip on the map. You're like, it happens. And you just leave it at that. So, I mean, that person, if there is someone who actually needs, if you need someone to work over or whatever, the first person you're going to ask is that employee because they're so valuable, because they do what they do. I'm going to give them an opportunity at money first. If I have a position for management, supervisor, that's the person I'm looking at. Looking at that person because I know that person is reliable. They're going to do what they need to do. There was someone who there was someone who worked at a job, and this happened to them. And they constantly asked them to stay over. They constantly asked them to do a lot. I mean, they really leaned on them because they didn't have anybody. Everybody was flaking. People were calling off. People weren't showing up. So they were asking this person. And this person didn't look at it the proper way. This person felt like, oh, they're constantly on me. They're asking me this. They're always asking me to stay late. They're asking me that. I just smiled, and they just looked at me like, what? And I said, I don't think you're looking at this the right way. I don't think you're viewing this the right way at all. They're doing that because they know you're reliable. They're asking you this because they know that they can count on you. And yes, they are leaning on you. And as a result, you're getting more money. You have a good name in the company. That's a good thing. That's a very good thing to have. Whereas if you didn't have a good name, that's obviously not as good. That could be in anything. That could be in school. That can be students. Students that do their homework all the time. They turn the homework in on time. They're in class. They're paying attention. They're taking notes. They're doing what they're supposed to do. If they have a problem, they go to the teacher. They ask the teacher for help. Versus people who are passing notes, people who are not paying attention, socializing with other people, not taking notes, not doing well on exams and things of that nature. That person rarely gets any type of favor. The person that does well, they can miss something on an exam or not understand something, and a teacher will bend over backwards to help them, give them credit. I've seen it, not in all cases. I did have this teacher that basically your grade was what it was. He didn't grade on a curve, nothing. It was, I got a 98.9. You have a 98. On to the next thing. And it was, I appreciated that type of thing though. It was very appreciative, but it's in anything in your life, you get a name. Generally, you get a reputation. Think about it. You can control how people view your name, how people view you to a certain extent. That's power right in the palm of your hand that many people don't think about. Most people don't think about their name and what it means. They don't think about what they're building, if they're building anything at all. They don't think about it. But these are some of the benefits of having a great name. Conversely, you can also damage your name. And you can damage your name quickly. It takes time and patience, and it's difficult to a certain extent to build a good name. But you can destroy it overnight like that. Example. How many have heard about the slap heard around the world that happened at the Oscars or seen it? So that entertainer began in the 80s. I remember I used to listen to some of what he did, and he began building his brand then. And in the 90s, he moved from music to acting. He was doing a sitcom, and that enjoyed some success. Then he decided, you know what? I want to move away from sitcoms, and I actually want to do movies. And he had some blockbusters. He had some pretty good movies. That went well, so we say, you know what? I don't want to do sitcoms anymore. I'm done. We're done with that. Now I'm 100% movies. And he chose the movies that he did really meticulously so that he could build his brand. And there were a couple bombs in there, but most of his movies were really good. So he built his brand over 30 years. Think about that for a moment. He was meticulously thinking about what he did, what movies, what roles he took, everything. 30 years. And then in one night where he had a lapse in judgment, a lack of self-control, did something that cost him greatly. Overnight, he lost millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. People decided we're not going to go to his movies. He had another role right after that. He went to the Oscars, and he actually had a role worthy of an Oscar. And he did that to the world. And he got another role where people thought, wow, this is another Oscar-worthy role. People didn't even show up to see the movie after he did what he did. Many people who had projects with him dropped him. He went to another very famous entertainer. Or he tried to call this entertainer, and they wouldn't even take his phone call. It was so bad, this person wouldn't even take his phone call. So not only can you destroy your reputation that fast just by a lack of judgment, association with someone who has a damaged name can damage your name just as fast. Everyone's heard the saying, birds of a feather flock together. Why do they say that? It's because you hang with people that are like you. Like attracts like. So you hang around people who are like you, who have your same attitudes and your same. So people will look at who your friends are, see little things in your friends they don't really care for or like, and say, obviously, you're that way. Now, is it true? Maybe not. Maybe you're making a mistake and you just want to be a good person and, oh, this person needs a friend. Maybe. But that's generally not how people see it. Case in point, Adidas. We're going to use Adidas as an example. Now, we are going to get to more scriptures, but this is just the setup. Adidas had a relationship with a famous entertainer, very famous entertainer. Adidas's history is very sketchy. Their owners, the people who started the company, were card-carrying Nazis. They weren't just in the German government and help the German government. And that's most of the Germans, that's where it was. We just helped them. What were we going to do? They tell us we have to help. No. These people were card-carrying Nazis. They were actually Nazis. And when the war was over, their company was in shambles, just like all of the companies in Germany. This company's, their reputation was in the garbage. They took years to rebuild their brand. Years. And they did it. Only to join with a person who began making anti-Semitic statements said they're part of the Black KKK in that type of thing. Now, they wanted to stay in a relationship with this person because they knew they were going to lose, depending on where you go, anywhere from $200 million to $250 million, $500 million, $1 billion. They were going to lose a lot of money. But they made the decision, you know what? We need to cut ties with this person because people are going to associate us with that. So there's no way that we're going to associate with that. So we have to cut them off, no matter how much it's going to cost us. It's better to lose $500 million or whatever they were going to lose than to be broke, than to go bankrupt because no one wants to buy your product because you're associated with that. So it's really tough to associate ourselves with people who aren't doing the right thing, who won't do the right thing. That's something each one of us has to think about when we're building that brand or building that reputation. So that's the good part and the bad part. Now, there's a little problem with reputation. There's a little nuance with reputation. Reputation is partially based on your actions, but it's also based on the perceptions of other people. And it's really based on the perceptions that people have about the perceptions others have about it. It gets really convoluted. It's based on their perceptions of you and the perceptions other people have of you. So to a certain extent, you can influence reputation, but you can never control it. That's very fragile. And that's one of the reasons that we shouldn't solely base our reputation on the opinions of others. It's very damaging. That can be very damaging. It has its part, but it can be extremely damaging. So let's turn to Proverbs chapter 31. The scripture is going to seem like it's a little bit of a contradiction, but it's not. Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 30. It says, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. I'm going to cut it right there. Favor is deceitful. Wait a minute. Didn't we just read a scripture that said favor is having favor, loving favor is better than silver and gold? So now we're seeing favor is deceitful. Why is that? Why are we getting that? Why the seeming contradiction? This is the contradiction, and this is the nuance of a reputation. People's reputation of you in the world is not based on character. It's based on what you do, what you have, your possessions. Is based on an image that you present. And that image can be very damaging to you. For instance, if you're beautiful, you'll have favor with people. You'll have a good reputation. Even though you didn't deserve it. Even though you didn't earn it. People will attribute to you character traits you don't have and yet you didn't earn based on what you look like, based on what you have. You have money, they'll do it. Based on your career, what you do for a job, it's prestigious. Someone who's a lawyer seems better than someone who's a trash man. So I'm gonna give favor to the person who's a lawyer. Don't think I'm telling the truth. There was a a man, you all probably know the name, Ted Bundy. The man was a good-looking lawyer. So he had access to whoever he wanted to have access to. He was committing crimes right around people in plain daylight. He wasn't hiding who he was. And people are wondering, what's going on? Who's this doing this? Who's this? He was never really even a suspect until he actually got caught doing something once. But before that, he wasn't even on the radar. And that's because he was good looking and he was a lawyer. So he has to be a decent person. He has to be a good guy. Doesn't mean that at all. But that's how people view reputation in this world. If you're in school, you can be a jock. I'm a captain of the basketball team, you know, captain of the cheerleading squad, whatever. And you're going to get favor as a result of that. You're popular. You're the in crowd. You're all of that. I know. That's pretty much how it works. So. Or if it could be any other skill that you have in school, in high school. You know, I'm good in drama. I'm a great mechanic. I'm a good draftsman. Just name it. Anything other than character, who you are as a person, is what the world will attribute to you. Good character traits. Well, what does God say about a name and how you develop a name and what a name should mean to you? Let's turn to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20 in verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that takes his name in vain. Normally when we hear this command, we think you don't use it, euphemisms. You don't use God's name in an improper way. That is correct. There's nothing wrong with it. That is correct. You don't cuss or anything like that with God's name. That is correct. But it means so much more than that. So much more than that. And it's so serious to God that he says, I'm not going to hold you guiltless if you do this. So what is that? You can't take God's name, meaning on yourself. I'm a Christian. I'm in the church of God, which is named after him. You can't say that is what I am and then go out and not actually act like a Christian, act like you're a part of the church of God. Do things that God wouldn't do and God wouldn't approve of. To do that is to take his name in vain. So we can't live that way. It's basically a double life. And God is associating himself with you just like anybody else with you, me. I'm talking about all of us. God is associating himself with us, and we're saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. That's a very serious thing to God. And if we do that, he says there's a penalty for it, a serious penalty for doing that. Turn over to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 9 is what we normally, the world calls the Lord's Prayer. Matthew 6, verse 9, he says, After this manner therefore pray you, our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. God expects us to hallow and venerate his name. Not only in words, but in deed, how we live. Hallowed be your name. Sacred, separate, for righteous purpose is your name. And that's how we need to see it and think about it. To not do that is to show great disrespect, which is why whenever you pray to God, whenever we pray to God, if we come to God and we get right to, hey, give me, or we're not thankful or anything like that, it's disrespectful. It's not hallowing God's name. So how does God view his reputation? How does he view his name, the brand that he built? Turn back to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, we'll start in verse 13. Exodus 3:13. And Moses said to God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel and say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. Or he can say, I am what I am, or I am who I am. And he said, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me. And God is basically saying there, I am what I am. Who I am as a person, my character, it's what it is. Yes, it means I'm the God who is alive and they are not. The idols. But ultimately, that's a view of his character. Who he is as a person. I am what I am. So what does God say that he is? Let's turn over to 1 John chapter 4. Just a couple examples of what God says he is. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 8. I'm going to start in verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God, for God is love. I am what I am. I'm love. Love personified. That's who I am at the core of me. That's what my name carries. When you say the name God, eternal, it connotates love. So that's one of the things that you, when you hear that name, you associate with the name God. What else? Let's turn to Psalm 86. Psalm 86. In verse 15. But you, O Lord, are a God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering, and plenteous in mercy and truth. So that's what God is. God is compassion. He's gracious. It means he's kind. When you hear the name God, God is kind. He's long-suffering. He puts up with a lot for a long time, and he hurts while he does it. It's like, how can a spirit being hurt? That's what long-suffering means. It's to suffer long with someone. It's to hurt while they while they figure it out, you can say. Plenteous in mercy. He's just not merciful. I have a lot of it. I have endless mercy. I am mercy. I love mercy. I love to show mercy. I can't wait to actually give mercy to other people. So much so, it defines who I am. My name, the God of mercy and of truth. I'm all about the truth. Not only speaking about the truth, but living it. Which is why I say don't take my name in vain. So if we revisited Proverbs 22:1, a good name actually means good character. And loving favor is really grace from God. Now, having a great name doesn't mean that people will like you. It doesn't mean that at all. Actually, in this world, the chance that you'll be disliked is probably greater than being liked. But ultimately, people have respect for people that have character. People dislike you for one reason or another. It's their own proclivities. I mean, we're going to talk about a story here where we'll see why someone was disliked, why someone was hated. But it had nothing to do with that person per se. It was because of the sins of the person doing the hating. So we can't control that. We can't do anything about that. Well, ultimately, that doesn't really matter. Because the one who you truly need to value the respect of is God. It's not people. We don't respect the value of people. People respect me. That doesn't mean anything. One minute a person can like you or respect you, another minute they can not respect you at all. Not have any. Your reputation can be great one minute, and the next minute they act like they don't know you. But God will be there for you all the time. You can control your reputation with God. Can do it with people. You can influence it with people, but you can't really control it. But with God, you can control it. So let's see Proverbs 22:1. Let's see that in action. Turn to Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39, we'll start in verse 1. This is the account of Joseph. he was sold into slavery by his brothers, and he ended up in Potiphar's house. So Genesis 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper. So his reputation right now is pretty good. Now he's doing everything, he obeyed God, and he's doing everything that God told him to do. And as a result, God is prospering everything that he does. And his boss is benefiting from it and sees it. So, yeah, he thinks this guy is great right now. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. Grace could also be favor. So he found favor not only in the sight of God, but also in the sight of his employer. And what did he do? What did we talk about earlier? And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. He put everything in his hand. He made him the supervisor. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him supervisor, overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. He benefited from having Joseph here. Joseph had to be, this is great. This is wonderful. It said something around here that, oh, there it is, verse. And he had left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had. He didn't know what he had, save the bread which he did eat. He trusted Joseph completely. It's like, I'm not worried about what I have. I'm sure that you're in, on top of that. Just make sure that the money's flowing and the wine's flowing and the food's plenteous. This was the greatest thing ever for him. And that's exactly what a good name gets you. He had a great reputation. Now, everyone wasn't enamored with Joseph. And this is where that nuance of reputation comes in. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." She was trying to get corrupt Joseph. She was trying to get him to do something with him that he knew he shouldn't have done. Now, the interesting thing about that is, the thing I think about is a couple things. One, wow, Joseph, he really had self-control. Two, what's the chance this is the first time that this wife has done this? She's pretty comfortable doing this. I can't prove it, but it's interesting that you're propositioning someone like this. So Joseph says, "No, I'm not going to do that. He put everything in my hands except you. So I'm not going to do this." And so what does she do as a result? And she, verse 12, and she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and he fled, that she called to the men and she destroyed his reputation in a moment. Like that. And that's the thing. People who have power, they have the power to do that. They can destroy your rep in a moment. And that's what she did. "See, he has brought in a Hebrew to mock us. And he came in to me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when I lifted up my voice, he ran, and look, here's his little garment." And she told her master when he came home, and all that reputation that he had built up, all that goodwill, all of that went by the wayside. He didn't stop and say, "Wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Joseph, why would Joseph do that? I've given him everything." He didn't say that. He got angry, tossed him in prison. This person, just with a word, caused someone pain, caused them to go to jail, destroyed his reputation. However, because he trusted in God, because he had a good name with God, not with people, he had a good name with God, God was with him while he was in prison. He helped him out. He actually became great when he was in prison. Until we go over to chapter 41 and verse 14. God raised up Joseph. Who wouldn't have given every dime that they had, money, to get out of prison, to get out of that situation, knowing you haven't done anything, you hadn't done anything wrong, and I'm in jail? Wow. But money may not have gotten him out. I mean, there's many times that people try to bribe other people and they take the money and they still do whatever they want to do. So having money is not a benefit always. But God sent a dream to Pharaoh so that he could raise up his servant, Joseph. In verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and he changed raiment and came into Pharaoh. Verses 15 through 36, he starts telling him about the dream and he explains what it means. Then you get to verse 37. And the thing that Joseph said, what he told them to do, was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, "Can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is?" They're noticing that. Wow. How are these Egyptians? That's interesting. These Egyptians know the Spirit of God? What do you mean? What are you talking about? But that's what they said. You know, the Spirit of God is in this man. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed you all this, there is none so discreet and wise as you. You will be over all my house. So now he was over Potiphar's house. Now he's over Pharaoh's house. And now he's second in command, actually, if you continue to read that. God, because Joseph had a good name with God, a good reputation with God, God raised him up, took him out of that situation, and made him second in command. Something Joseph would not have been able to do on his own. Trusting in God. So that's just proof that our reputation should be based on character. And it should be based on our relationship with God. What does God think? How does God view me? What does my character tell God about me? When he looks at me, what does he see? When my name is said before him, what does he think? What thoughts are conjured into his mind? So, okay, Mr. Mayan, I get your point. You've convinced me. So how do we do that? How do we build that name? How do we do that? I'll tell you what. What it isn't is nuanced. God is very simple. We're going to go to a verse, and this one verse encapsulates everything. Do this, and you will be sure to build a good reputation. Go to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. Matthew 7:12. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. This is the essence of the law and the writings of the prophets. Everything they wrote about. Do unto other people as you would have them do unto you. We know that as the golden rule. Everything that we do should be judged by that one thing. Is my behavior, does that line up with do unto others as you would have them do unto others as you would have them do unto you? Does it match? If you're in school and people are ostracizing someone, they're not talking to them. They're off in the corner of someone and no one's talking to them. And you see that. Would you want someone to do that to you? That's basically the question. Now, if they've done something worthy of being put off into the corner, that's one thing. But they really haven't. They're just not part of the in crowd. Maybe they don't dress cool. Maybe they don't have money. Whatever the reason, other than some, you know, character. Do you ask the question? Would I want someone to treat me that way? If the answer is no, then according to this principle, your behavior should change. I made a mistake. Would I want someone to be yelling at me, denigrating me, calling me out of my name, doing any of that stuff, giving me attitude? Would I want that, or would I want them to be patient with me and be kind and be merciful? The answer is kind and merciful, which it should be, unless you're a sadist. Then is my behavior, because this person made a mistake, am I treating them that way? Am I judgmental? Am I actually mean to them as a result? How do I treat other people? There's actually an example of this golden rule applied in these scriptures a few pages over. Go to chapter 18. Matthew 18 and verse 21. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times? And Jesus said unto him, I say not unto you until seven times, but until 70 times seven. So, of course, what's that, 490 times? Can you imagine that you're marking off sins? You know, oh, man, I got to 100. He's got 390 more to go. Oh, I don't know if I want to make it. Of course, God, Christ was basically saying, you endlessly forgive. You just keep forgiving. And then he said, therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought to him which owed him 10,000 talents. Let's say it's somewhere around $100 million. But for as much as he had not to pay, he had nothing to pay, didn't have the money, his Lord commanded him to be sold, sell his wife, sell his children, sell his house, sell everything, sell his donkey, sell everything that he has, and payment to be made. Now, what's the chance that he was going to recover $100 million from doing all that? No, not at all. The point is, let's recover what we can recover. That's the best I'm going to be able to do. So the servant, when he heard that, fell down and worshiped him and said, Lord, have patience with me and I will pay you everything. Maybe you'll pay back $100 million. But I'll pay you everything if you have mercy on me. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave the debt. He didn't even say, okay, you have a year. Give me my money back. No, he had compassion on him and he forgave him. Forgave him the debt. That's wonderful. That's amazing. $100 million and you just forgive it. Don't forget about it. You don't owe me anything anymore. But the same servant that just got forgiven went out and found one of his fellow servants which owed him 100 pence. That's a few hundred dollars to $1,000 maybe. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat. So he saw him. You can imagine he's walking and he pushes him up and grabs him by the throat. Pay me my money. That's what he does. He says, give me what you owe me. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him saying, have patience with me and I'll pay you everything. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. He had no mercy on him. He didn't stop and think, wait a minute, I was just forgiven. My master didn't act that way with me. He was going to sell me and everything. And I said, forgive me. Give me time. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I wanted to be forgiven and I was forgiven, but I did not do unto others as I wanted done unto me. I went out and you owe me and I want my money now. Not yet. Not now. I want it yesterday. And if you don't give it to me, I'm throwing you in prison. And that's exactly what he did. So, of course, his Lord heard about it, came to him or summoned him and said, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you asked me to do it. Shouldn't you have gone out and forgiven that servant who you threw in prison? Shouldn't you have forgiven him the debt? Shouldn't you have done unto him what you wanted done to you? That's not how you thought about it at all. So his reputation was what? Mud. His reputation was horrific. It was very bad. Our rep boils down to one of two things. It's very simple. It's not complicated at all. It's either give versus get. We're either concerned about other people and we want to give or we want to get. We're either selfless or we're selfish and we think about ourselves. That's all we think about. I don't think about you. I don't think about what you think. I don't think about what you feel. Any of that. We either love other people or we hate them. There's no in between. There are people who could watch something happen and not actually involve themselves in the event and say, well, I didn't do anything to the person. But what they are is indifferent. They're apathetic. They're indifferent to the person suffering. They don't care. Indifference is kind of like thinking, how can something that really isn't anything, that's really insignificant, that doesn't even exist, how can it have feelings? Now, most people don't consciously think that. But that's pretty much what indifference is. It's a form of hate. There's no in between. It's like, well, no, I just sat on the sideline. Maliciousness is hate. Malice. You do something, oh, I want to get you. Indifference is, I don't even care that you exist. You're not even on the spectrum. I don't even see you. You know, if love is outgoing to concern for another, then not having outgoing concern for another, whether it's malice or indifference, is hate. It's a form of hate. Don't have time to go to this other scripture, but in Matthew 25, 31 through 40, Christ talks about, no, let's go there. Go to Matthew chapter 25. We are going to go there. Matthew 25, and we're going to start in verse 31. It says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, everyone. And he shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set his sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. So you get a reputation right there by God. I categorize you. You're either a sheep or you're a goat right here. We're not gonna make it complicated. You're a sheep or you're a goat. This is what he says to the sheep. Then the king says unto them on his right hand, come you, blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me meat. Someone maybe doesn't have enough money to buy food and you give them money to buy food. You care about them, outgoing concern. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. Same thing. They didn't have water. You gave them something to drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I wasn't a part of the in crowd. And you were inclusive. You included me. Naked and you clothed me. Maybe they don't have enough clothes and you offer to give them clothes. Now, what I'm not saying is to take all your clothes. I don't want the parents coming to me. You told my kids to give their clothes away. It's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying give all your clothes away. But what I am saying is you can help people. You can ask your parents if you can I give this to this person? They need it. So that's I was sick and you visited me. Wasn't sick. I wasn't feeling well. COVID-19, you may not be able to visit them, but you can call them. You can see how they're doing. You can check on them. You can have outgoing concern. I was in prison and you came unto me. I was trying to figure out how to apply this to teens. It was like, if you're in school suspension, you can go visit them. Don't do that. Don't do that at all. But you're there for people. And then over the next few verses, these people ask Christ, when did I ever see you? When did we ever do this, these things to you? I don't understand. And the king shall answer and say unto them, truly I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of my brethren, one of these people who were least, someone who could possibly be someone who doesn't exist. You're not going to say the greatest, because everyone, you get something in it for us if we serve people who are great, but people who are insignificant, who we deem as insignificant, or other people may deem as insignificant. He's saying, if you do it unto those people, you've done it unto me. Do we think of it that way? Do we think whenever I serve, whatever it is that I'm doing to this person, it's Jesus Christ? So would I be talking to this person this way if this was Jesus Christ? Would I be snarky? Would I have an attitude? Would I not give him water, or would I break my neck to give him water because I know it's Jesus Christ? Would I serve them or not serve them? Would I break my neck to go over and say hello because it's Jesus Christ? Or, how do we think? Because Christ says, if you do it to them, you're doing it to me. Do we see it that way? Is that in our heads? That's a very sobering thing if you think about it. But to conclude, you've kind of now learned the true value of a name, of a good name. Not just a name, a good name. We learned that a good name is equal to the character displayed, giving that name value to God. They'll have value to other people to a certain extent, but ultimately we care about what God thinks. And when you have a good reputation with God, you receive loving favor and help whenever you need it. We know we build that name, that reputation, by building character, by having character. And the simplest way to build character is to apply the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now is the time. Now is the time for everyone to build that name, to think about that name, to think about what it says to God about who we are. Build that name, build that reputation, so that that name and that reputation can serve you throughout the rest of your lives, and it will also last you throughout the rest of your lives. Good night.